is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Recruiting for me was different because all I had to do was make touch when I was assistant, pass them on to the head coach, and the head coach did the rest, where now you're having to do all the talking.
Jameel Santiel is in his first year as the head men's basketball coach at Yellowstone Christian College in Billings, Montana. Coach Santiel began his coaching career at his alma mater, Grace University, in Omaha, Nebraska. During his first year, he helped lead the Royals to their first regional tournament appearance in three seasons. Santiel has coached at Nebraska Christian College as the lead assistant the past 3 years and helped lead the program to a regional championship, followed by an NCCAA D1 national tournament appearance. Jameel was born and raised in Indio, California, and attended Indio High School, where he played basketball all 4 years, graduating in 2009. After high school, Jameel attended College of the Desert, a JUCO, where he played basketball his freshman and sophomore years, and graduated in 2012. Jameel was given the opportunity to continue playing basketball at Grace University in Omaha, Nebraska, where he played his final 2 years, graduating in 2016. The following season, he joined the Grace coaching staff and began his coaching career. Hoopheads Nation, if you love what you're hearing, please leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to the show. Believe it or not, those ratings help others in the basketball community find the Hoopheads pod. We would also appreciate you sharing the show with one friend or coaching colleague that you know would enjoy listening to the Hoopheads pod. And if you're not subscribed yet, just hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. You can find the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, and YouTube. Take some notes as you listen to this episode with Jameel Santiel from Yellowstone Christian College in Billings, Montana. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast from Yellowstone Christian College, Jameel Santiel. Jameel, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Mike. Thank you for having me. It's an honor and a privilege to be here. Heard a lot of great things. I listened to a couple of the podcasts. So I'm real excited to be a part of it.
Well, thanks for the kind words. We really appreciate it. It's always good to know, as I say, when people tell that to me, I always say, it's good to know somebody out there is listening. Sometimes you're talking into the mic and we're talking to our guest and you hope that it gets out there and that people are hearing the message and getting to hear from the great coaches that we've been able to have on the show. So it's always good to hear that people are listening. And so we appreciate that and we're excited to give you an opportunity to share your journey. So let's start out by going back in time, Jameel, to when you were a kid. And just talk a little bit about your early experiences with the game of basketball, how you got introduced to it, and what made you fall in love with the game.
I started playing as young as I could remember. I just, probably like around 2 or 3, my dad, he used to always go to the rec where I'm from, the rec center, indoor rec center. And I just remember me and my sister would be on the bleachers just drawing, coloring. While he's out there playing, and then after that we just started playing. My sister and I started playing. He's been my coach for like a good chunk of the time. especially as I was growing up, going into middle school and high school, and sort of that aspect. So, I mean, the game started from him, just taking us to the red, getting us involved, bringing us around the game, beautiful game, obviously. And then went to high school. I played at Indio High School. That was a pretty good experience as well. It was kind of unfortunate for me because I went through like a number of coaches. I played both ways freshman year, freshman and varsity. Sophomore, junior, and senior year, I played varsity. But I had two different coaches when I was playing varsity at the high school. So it was kind of, again, just going through different, you know, coaches' philosophy, different coaching style, and all that. After playing at Indio, I went to College of the Desert, which is in my hometown. I played there for 2 years. And then I got the opportunity to go play at Grace University in Omaha, Nebraska. One of my coaches from back home, his dad, he worked there. He was AD. At that time, I wasn't playing. I had took a year off because I wasn't able to go anywhere out after College of the Desert. I'm a real undersized guard, so I didn't get a lot of looks. But one of my coaches, he was a women's coach for, I believe, Shadow Hills at the time. Asked me if I still wanted to play. I was like, yeah. He's like, well, I have this connection out here. I think you should really go try it out. So I went, tried it out at Grace University. First year was kind of rocky, my experience out there. It turned out I was ineligible. I didn't have enough credits to meet that 24-12 rule. So I was ineligible. Came back home spring semester, got eligible, went back. My junior year, so that was before my junior year. And that was kind of rocky again. It was just kind of, again, I think it was more so a learning experience for me. I ended up getting cut at the end of the season just because of, I guess, like my personality and demeanor. I was kind of like a cancer, not intentionally, you know, the cancer in the locker room. It was not intentional by any means, but. You know, it was just part of the learning experience I had to go through. So I ended up getting cut. If it wasn't for one of my coaches back home, that ended up calling my head coach there. Like, hey, you know, it's a learning experience. Give him another try. So he gave me spring ball. Spring ball is like, if he doesn't do well in spring ball, then I don't need him. I don't want him. Went out there in spring ball. Did my thing, you know, kept my head down, nose clean. Was able to grow and learn from that experience, definitely. Was able to communicate effectively as opposed to disrespectfully when I was doing. And then my senior year, everything was all kosher, you know, was good. And then after my senior year, yeah, he just, my head coach, Coach Williams, shout out to him because, I mean, my original plan was I just wanted to play ball. You know, after my JUCO, I was planning on just going and getting my degree in engineering until I got this opportunity to go play at Grace. And then after I played there, I was just planning on going back to finish out my degree in engineering. I just wanted the opportunity to play out, you know, play college basketball. I mean, that's what mostly every kid wants.
Right.
So Coach asked me, like, hey, I mean, we had a rocky start, but I mean, like, I really appreciate your input and what you bring. Like, how would you feel about coming on as one of my assistants? So I was like, well, I mean, I already put my original degree on hold. So I figured, like, another year would have hurt. You know, give it a try and see what happens. Turns out that next year was kind of interesting because he was there, but then he left midway. He got another job offer, which is still in town at Nebraska Christian College. It's about 20 minutes away from Grace University. But he got another job over there. I stayed out that year and finished it out under Coach Cleaver. Definitely a learning experience. But, I mean, that's just when I just started to fell in love with coaching. You know, that's when I knew kind of like what I wanted to do. I went back with Coach Will at NCC. I followed him the following year. I just wanted to finish out that year for the players. All the assistants did, and so went over to NCC, and I coached under him for 2 years, and then yeah, coming here now over at Yellowstone Christian as a head coach. he's kind of
so
legit,
before so, yeah. you before he asked you about coming on to coach, had you had any thoughts at all about coaching? I mean, was that something that was on your radar? I know you said, hey, you want to keep playing, and just like most kids, as you said, they want to play college basketball and want to be able to continue to play for as long as they can. Mm-hmm. And then you talked about going back and getting your engineering degree. Was there any thought at that point before coach approached you that, hey, I want to get into coaching, I'd like to stay involved in the game on the coaching side of it? Or was that just something that you hadn't really thought about, but then once he presented it to you, you're like, oh, maybe this might be a good thing for me?
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it. I did coach. I coached track in after high school, after I graduated. I did like the jump coaching track, and I also coached a couple of travel ball teams with Coach Thad, which is the one that helped me get to Grace. He had his travel ball team called Full Potential, and I coached that for a little bit, but it wasn't really much like, okay, this is what I know I'm gonna do, like. I just did it because it was, I mean, one, beneficial for me. I still got to learn. And I was still playing at the time, too. So it still got me heavily involved in the game and still learning from a different aspect. And then when he presented it, that's what I was like, yeah, well, I mean, I already put my degree on hold for a year. Or for not a year, but for a couple of years to come out here and play. I mean, another year wouldn't hurt. So I just said, yeah, you know, I mean, I'll give it a try, see the experience, and if I like it, then, you know, I'll stay. If I don't, then I'll just go back and just go with my original plan and get my degree. So it wasn't until he actually presented the idea to me, I was like, okay, yeah, you know, maybe, yeah, let's check it out and see what happens.
It's funny because we've heard now, having talked to, I don't know how many coaches we've had on over the course of the podcast, but we're coming up on episode, well, by the time yours airs, we'll be past 250. But, you know, not everybody's been a coach. We've done some NBA ones. But we've talked to a lot of coaches, I guess, is my point. And it's interesting because the stories are either one of two. They're either your story where somebody was a player, never really thought about coaching, just sort of fell into it by some sort of circumstance that arose up in their life and fell in love with it after they were sort of thrown into it. And then you mm-hmm. have the other breed of coach who, you know, it was the kid who was in third grade and was diagramming plays on a napkin while their family was eating dinner. And I think, you know, most coaches that we've talked to fall into one of those two categories. Either they had no thought of coaching, or they kind of knew they were going to be a coach from the time that they were a really little kid. And I always find it interesting to hear the different stories from coaches about how they got into the game, you know, as a coach,
Yeah. Especially
when you transition from a player, because we all know how passionate we all are when we're playing the game and how much we love it. And that's clearly what causes us to fall in love with it. And then mm-hmm. that transition to coaching, you have to, it's approaching the game from a totally different point of view, from the playing side of it to the coaching side of it. So to kind of go along with that, when you first took that coaching job, what was something that was surprising to you about coaching that maybe you didn't realize coaches spent as much time as they did on this part of coaching? Or maybe there was something that you didn't even realize that coaches had to do. What was something that surprised you that first time when you took off the uniform and put on the whistle?
Man, one of the things that I think it was kind of interesting, because, I mean, like I said, Coach Webb had brought me on. So I was under him for pretty much all of preseason, and then I think about 8 games in to the regular season before he ended up leaving and Coach Cleaver ended up taking over. It's kind of interesting to kind of see and again, it's all players go through, especially when they have different coaches and everyone has a different philosophy, but how much time one person puts into one thing as opposed to the other. So I know what Coach Will, I mean, one of the things he really spent a lot of time on was his practice plan. You know, he wanted to make sure he had everything down to the minute, to the second. It was all detailed out, just letting everyone know what they're going to do in that aspect. And then one of the things Coach Cleaver took, which is kind of like his high priority, was film. So he'd watch a lot of film and then kind of just go from there, kind of devise what he wants to do on practice from there. Where Coach, you know, so it's kind of interesting just how much time they put in outside of what we think we see, you know, when they're in the office, because they don't realize work goes home with them. It doesn't just stop when they leave the office. It continues home with them. So I think that was just one of the main things. It's just, it's a lot of work, you know? I mean, it's a lot of time, a lot of hours to try to get the players to reach their full potential and to get them to play to their full capabilities.
Yeah, that's one of the things I think that players on any level take for granted, the amount of time that a coach puts in outside of the practice floor. I know, speaking for myself, even when I played in college, you know, you'd see coaches, you know, maybe you were at class and you'd walk into the office and, you know, maybe they were there, maybe they weren't there, or maybe they were in a meeting and you kind of, all right, you know, they're here, but you know, how hard can they be working? And then you see them at practice and they're there for the, you know, same 2.5-3 hours that you're there for. And then, oh, they must just go home. And just like, you know, we got to go and study. They go home to their family and eat dinner. And you don't realize all the things that coaches are doing when you're a player. And I think when you shift over to that coaching side, you start to come to understand and appreciate a lot more the time that coaches put into their players. And a lot of times as players, you know, we get that feeling of, oh, you know, coach this and coach that. And, you know, there's a little bit of that, you know, everywhere. And I thought about that when you said, you know, how, you know, at one point you were termed as a cancer. And you think about, I think about, you know, different players that I played with and just things that went on teams that I played for. And then conversely, teams that I've had the good fortune of being able to coach. And those things, I think, are always there to some degree. It's just a matter of the culture that you build as a coach and what that looks like. But it's interesting, again, that as players, we don't think about all the time that coaches spend thinking about the game, thinking about practice, thinking about the culture, thinking about the relationships between players and how that affects what goes on the court. And there's just so much that goes into it that players don't necessarily see because it's all kind of done behind the scenes. It's like that old analogy of the duck floating on top of the lake and you just see the calm, serene duck and you don't see all the paddling that goes on underneath the water. And so I'm sure that you jumped into that right away. So as you jumped into an assistant position, what did you like initially about being an assistant coach? What were some of the things that you enjoyed particularly about your assistant coaching role at first?
I mean, the first thing, and I think this is with anyone, the first thing they get is they kind of get that sense of having the power. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, I don't have to run anymore. I can make these players run. you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
So, I mean, it was kind of I'm not going to lie. At first glance, it was definitely kind of like a power hungry thing where, you know, I think for me, it was kind of a little different because like some of the players I was coaching, I also played with. Right. So it was a sense of trying to build that difference. Now, like, yes, I play with you, but I'm also your coach now at the same time. So one of the things, especially under Coach Williams, he's like, hey, like, yes, these guys were your friends, but you have to understand the difference now when you guys are at practice or when you guys are here, like, you're no longer friends in that aspect. You're his coach. So just trying to make sure I separated that balance between that. But I mean, first, yeah, it was making them run just because I know what I had to go through and endure and suffered all preseason, season, postseason, spring ball, you know, summer workouts or whatever. That was kind of the fun part for me, just to see them kind of die as I did.
How difficult was that to make that train? How difficult was that for you to make that transition from, okay, one year I'm next to these guys and I'm going through those battles on the bench with them and I'm in uniform and we're having to run suicides and we're having to do this and we're all in this together. And then all of a sudden the next year, here's this guy that was next to me in the previous season. And now he's barking at me, trying to get me to do things. How difficult was that transition in terms of getting the guys to respect that position, to respect you in that coaching role, since obviously a lot of them knew you as a player?
Yeah, I actually don't think it was that hard. I think the transition was probably smoother for me, was smoother than most in a sense, because my role, I was kind of like one of the leaders on the team. So I already kind of like had that respect aspect towards some of the players, especially some of those that were leaders with me that returned the previous year were obviously, of course, one of my biggest advocates and they'll, if I said something, they made sure the other players knew and understood, like, hey, like, yes, he just graduated. Yes, he's the same age as us, but he is our coach, and whatever he says goes. And then, I mean, also helps when you have the head coach, you know, that's there for you, and then also backing you up and ensuring that they respect that role and that boundary between. So it was actually kind of a smooth transition for me. It wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be. So it was pretty smooth.
That's good. I think you said the key there is, I think your head coach has to, in that situation, I think the head coach has to be very, very, I don't know if careful is the right word, but just has to make sure that they're supportive of that person who's in your position there, where you're transitioning from player to assistant coach, to make sure that the coach doesn't blur the line between, okay, this person was a player, now they're a coach. They got to make sure that everybody understands that whatever playing history there was is gone, and now you're just a coach, and that,
yeah, definitely,
players need to respect that. I think that's really important.
Yeah, because I remember there was a couple of times where, especially in the beginning, preseason, you know, because, hey, Mill, that's what they called me, Mill or Mills or Jamil, okay, or whatever. And then, yep, coach would be like, no, it's Coach Mill or Coach Jamil, or he would correct them instantly on the spot. And at first, you know, for me, it's like, oh, it didn't really matter. But we had a brief meeting, and told me like, hey, like, you know, I just want you to know, like, they need to address you as coach. It's not in a sense of showing authority, but in a sense of like, they need to know that you're a coach now, not just their friend, that you're their coach or helping them get to the next level that they want to get at. So I think after that talk, I was like, oh, like, you know, he's right. I got to make sure, you know, that the players are saying Coach Mill, Coach this, Coach that, or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's important to draw that line for sure. Mm-hmm. I think it's very easy for that line to get blurred, and then you start getting yourself into some situations that may not be comfortable for anybody. But I think if the head coach establishes right out of the gate that, hey, this person is now a coach, they're a member of my coaching staff, and they establish that way, then I think that, I'm sure, helped you to get off to a better start in your career, as opposed to if it was a little bit wishy-washy and then, players,
yeah,
I don't know, this guy, you know, we played with this guy last year, and now I'm not sure what exactly is his role. So it's good, mm-hmm, that you had a coach that was strong enough to be able to do that for you and help you and get your career off to a really good start. So as you progress on, what was something that you really enjoyed about coaching that you didn't think, maybe before you got into it, that you didn't think you would like that much? What's something that, you know, did you really say, oh man, I really love watching film, or oh, I love the practice planning, or I love the player development side of it, or I love the off-court relationships with the players? Just talk a little bit about what are some of the things that, as you were new to the profession, what were some things that really jumped out at you that made you say, I want to try to pursue this for my career?
I mean, one of the main things for me definitely was scouting report. Just being able to watch film, break down the plays, the sets, the player tendencies. That was definitely one of the main things that I wanted to go and, you know, pursue, and ended up turning out, that being my role as assistant, was doing the scouting reports, breaking down film, giving, and which is funny, because Coach Will, he was he likes to kind of control everything, but like during, mm-hmm, that time, he was kind of giving like more leeway to assistants, especially when I was playing, he was giving a little more leeway. So when I got there, I mean, I guess I got there at the right time, too, at the point where he was giving leeway. So he's like, all right, well, you want scouting report? Okay, well, you have scouting report then. And then, I mean, I took it and just ran with it.
Head Start Basketball, along with members of the Jay Billis Skills Camp staff, will be hosting the very first Prime Skills Camp, an affiliate of the Jay Billis Skills Camp that is held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina. Prime Skills Camp will take place on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, June 26th through the 28th. And will be designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9. Prime Skills Camp will mirror the Jay Billis Skills Camp in daily programming, teaching, coach-to-camper ratio, and quality of instruction. Prime Skills Camp brings all of the team-oriented individual instruction, focus on the fundamentals, and high-level coaching to young men aspiring to a high school varsity basketball experience. This camp is operated by Billis Camp veterans and includes the Jay Billis Coaches Development Program alongside the camp, ensuring that the quality of teaching and coaching at this camp is second to none. Please visit headstartbasketball.com or jbilliscamp.com for more information or to get registered. Well, that's something that whenever, again, we talk to coaches, they all have one particular aspect or two particular aspects of coaching that they really enjoy. And some coaches, like, I love the games. A lot of coaches are, I love the practices. We've talked to a bunch of guys who love watching film. They're like, I can never watch enough film. I can never, doesn't matter if I've seen four games on an opponent, if there's two more games available, I find myself having to watch them because, yeah, I'm just going to watch them so I make sure that I don't miss anything. And even if I'm not picking out anything that I'm necessarily going to share with my players, it just makes me feel more comfortable. And it's just, I always find it to be so interesting to hear different coaches' perspectives about what they love about coaching. So as you continue to progress and you're at Nebraska Christian, how does the opportunity to come to Yellowstone, how does that happen? Talk to us a little bit about how that opportunity came your way.
So it actually happened the following year after Grace. I think that following year, the school ended up shutting down. So the college closed and all that. I was over at Nebraska. But that summer, I had my little brother with me from California. He was working out with me. I was training him to get him ready for high school. And it came to a point where we had a certain access to the gym at Grace before it shut down. But then being that they found out I was a coach at the other school at Nebraska Christian, which I guess essentially would be like their rival, they wouldn't allow me in the gym anymore, even as an alumni.
Persona non grata, Jameel, you're out of there.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just funny. Great school. I learned a lot from that school, but I just always find that kind of interesting for me. But the new women's coach there, Coach Brandon, I met him, and he would let my little brother go in there and then work out while he was practicing. So kind of like under his supervision and his care while he was practicing his girls' team. So that's kind of tying in. So I met Coach Brandon at Grace. The following 2 years later at Nebraska Christian, my school, we make it to the national tournament. And then he ended up leaving to here at Yellowstone, and his girls' team made it to the national tournament. So I met up with him again over at the national tournament. So I knew a couple of players that were on his team. One of them is actually from my hometown. We're really good friends. So I'd stay and watch their games, and vice versa, they'd stay and watch our games. And then most of the time when none of us were playing, we'd just be up there watching, you know, the rest of the tournament, who's playing and whatnot. Come to find out, I didn't know it at the time, he was kind of like interviewing me in a sense, because he didn't have a men's coach. So we were just talking and hanging out. We were just talking basketball, different stuff, like life stuff or whatever. He's kind of just kind of getting a feel of if he could work with me or not. And X, Y, Z, because he's also the AD here. So after the national tournament, about a week later, he gave me a call. He was like, hey, I really enjoy, you know, linking back up with you again at national tournament. Seemed like a cool guy. We have a head men's coach job opportunity over here that just opened up because I want you to apply for it. I was kind of shocked, you know. I was like, oh snap, this is only my third year in, you know. Like,
right.
Dang, head coach, like, dang, I don't know if I could do it or, you know, X, Y, and Z, you know. But like, it's also like a boast of excitement too, you know, to like, hey, there's a coach over here that wants you to apply for the head coaching job. So I applied and then went through the interview process and all that, and then ended up getting it.
All right, I got to ask you about the interview process. What was either the toughest question or the strangest question that you got asked in your interview, if you remember?
I think one of the main things, because I wouldn't say it's a tough one, but I think one of the main things is how I would transition from assistant to head, in the aspect of, do I have enough, I guess, like training under my belt? Am I prepared enough for it? In that aspect. And my head coach, Coach Will, said, if I didn't think you were ready, I wouldn't tell you to go apply for the job. You know, I wouldn't tell you like, yeah, if you could get it, like take it. So that kind of gave me also like a boost of confidence, you know, like, okay, maybe I am ready. But it was just kind of that, just how would I do that? How would I, being that I'm so close in age, it's always that same question because I'm so close in age with these guys. It was okay, well, how are you going to, make that, that boundary between coach and you being the same age and X, Y, and Z. So I think those were kind of the main ones that really kind of threw me off in that aspect.
So how do you answer that question of, are you prepared? How are you going to transition from being an assistant to being a head coach? Talk a little bit about, A, what you thought maybe that transition was going to be like, and then share your experience about what it actually was like. Because I know there's a lot of coaches in our audience who either are currently assistants and have never been head coaches, or maybe they're head coaches that, are looking to transition to another new job. So just talk a little bit about what you thought the transition from assistant to head coach was going to be like, and then what it actually was like.
So I think the on-court, the basketball stuff was a smooth transition. I had brought a couple of pairs with me from Nebraska Christian, so they kind of also helped, set the expectations of what I expected from the other players. So that kind of made that transition smooth. I think the one thing that I was not really expecting was how much of an administrative role coaches play, dealing with, I can't tell you how many meetings I've just been in just with, players or, I'm just trying to think of certain things like the vision of the school and where we're trying to go. I'm at a small Christian college. So like how we're trying to grow and expand and, just sitting in like all these different meetings and actually how many meetings there are. And then also, maintaining your relationship with these kids, which is one of the big things that Coach Will told me is like relationship is going to be one of the main things of making sure you establish that and maintain good ones. So I think having to do that was, another kind of shock and surprise. And then recruiting for me was different because all I had to do was make touch when I was assistant, pass them on to the head coach, and the head coach did the rest, where now, you're having to do like majority of all the talking and that aspect.
You're the closer now.
Yeah, exactly. So at first all I had to do was reel him in, and Coach Will, he could talk. So he did the rest of the part. I just, just had to evaluate players and find some decent talent. And now it's, you got to do both. So it's just been a little bit. And I think for me as well, because I don't have an assistant. It's just me as a head. So I could see how much they value now the roles of the assistants and what they do and bring to the table. Just because, you can only think about, coaches that have assistants but still there all day. And then the coach that doesn't have an assistant, how much work they have to do. Just not even basketball-wise as well.
Right.
Just, all the ins and outs, the practice planning, the scheduling, making sure kids are, on track with grades and graduating and all that. And yeah, it's been a ride. I can tell you that.
I believe it. I can only imagine without an assistant coach, the amount of administrative things that you have to do that are outside of what the ordinary person might think of as being a responsibility of a basketball coach, just from, you mentioned a bunch of them, but I think about like organizing travel and uniforms mm-hmm. and equipment and making sure this is there and just getting everything organized. And so to have to do all that without an assistant coach, I don't know that the average fan, the average person out there who's not involved in coaching may not understand the demands that are placed on your time. And then I think, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong here, but one of the things that I think from hearing your story and listening to you talk and now hearing that, okay, he doesn't have an assistant coach. I think one of the most challenging parts of that would be that you just don't have anybody to talk to about things that go on in the team. Like to me, that's always been one of the things that I love the most about coaching is, all right, the game's over now. You and the assistant or you and the head coach go back and, you sit down in the coach's office and you rehash that, or you talk about practice, or you figure out what mm-hmm. you do better. And to not have that, I can only imagine it's got to be really difficult.
Yeah, it definitely is, because, I mean, sometimes like, okay, you know, you try to get that feedback, or you try to get, especially during games, a different eye, which I've been real thankful that the women's coach, he'd sit down with me during the game just to help me out. And even his assistant would sit down, you know, on the bench during games just to help out as much as they could. But yeah, I mean, as it comes to, well, I'm usually talking to myself. I'm like, what do you think about this for practice? I'm like, yeah, you know, I think that would be good. You know, I have no, like, well, what about this or what about that or what if we did this or anything like that. So that has been kind of tough. But one thing that I have turned to is my players. I feel like they kind of know, in a sense, I have some pretty good leadership on the team, which I'm real thankful for, because that's literally made this, especially my first year, easier than you know, it could be. So they've been able to be like, hey, you know, I think, you know, what if we did this at practice? You know, I take their input and be like, okay, you know, I like that. That's good. We could definitely work on that. I can see where that's coming from. Or, you know, coach, I just feel like we don't get enough of this in practice or something like that. So they've done a really good job of telling me. So that's kind of helped as well. So I've been blessed to have like the women's coaches and then my players as well. The leadership on the team has just been tremendous for me.
Yeah, that's great that your players are on board and that they've bought into what you're doing. And I think when you have that type of relationship with your guys, which I know we talked about right off the top of the podcast, that those relationships are so important to you. When you have good relationships with players, especially in your situation, without an assistant to be able to bounce ideas off of, I think that being able to bounce the ideas off the players and have them come to you with suggestions and building that kind of rapport where you can have that back and forth, that give and take with your players, is a great situation for you. I'm sure that at least gives you a sounding board where you can have somebody to give you some feedback. Because I know that for myself, to be able to just go back and keep internalizing that and putting it into your own head, that could drive you crazy for sure, Jameel.
Yeah, definitely.
So if you think about where...
I mean, some of my players even...
Go ahead.
My bad. I was going to say, like, some of my players, I know one of them, he even, like, gave me a play for us. You know, hey, coach, I found this play. Like, what do you think? I mean, it's a really good play, out-of-bounds play. It works, like, 90% of the time. I'm like, well, yeah, let's do it. Let's work. And I think it's good that, you know, like, my players, you know, basketball, you're always stealing players and tweaking it for yourself to fit your system and program. But, you know, I don't like to sit there and think I know it all, because obviously I don't. And I think that's one of the things my players know, is that I don't know it all. And they feel comfortable coming to me, like, you know, being able to give their opinions or suggestions or concerns, like, hey, coach, you know, X, Y, and Z. So I think that's been a real good thing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. What's been something that, from maybe when you went into the year, what was your number one goal or your number one thing that you wanted to establish with the program? So if you wanted to be known for one thing, what's the thing that you really tried to get across to your players that you wanted to emphasize this year? And you said, boy, at the end of the year, if we've accomplished this, then we're really on the track that I want us to be on going into the future.
Yeah, so I think one of the main thing is just believing. That was kind of our team mission statement for the year, is we believe. And it's just like, I know for like the history over here at Yellowstone, the basketball program hasn't been the greatest. So I know, especially for us, a lot of teams come in, they schedule us, they know it's going to be easy win, you know, quote unquote. So I just wanted them to like believe that, you know, like believe in themselves and what their abilities, you know, and their abilities and what they could do, and go out there on the court, perform and compete with some of these powerhouse schools that we're playing against. And just be able to go out there and make noise, you know, especially for one, obviously for me, being my first year, obviously, you know, every coach wants to win. But just to be able to go out there and just, you know, go out there and compete, at least make the other coach sweat a little bit, you know, maybe we do come out with some good wins that will shock, you know, a lot of the other schools that we're playing. But just, you know, I just wanted them to believe in themselves, believe in the team, believe in each other, and believe in the program. That was just kind of like one of the main things that I try to hit on early.
So as a new coach, how do you develop that belief system? What are some things that you do or that you thought were important to get your guys to believe, to buy into what you were bringing to the table?
A lot of that is, I guess, kind of, I used kind of like my resume, I guess. Winning, we went to regionals and we won regionals last year. I went to nationals. So I kind of brought that, like, this is where kind of like I came from. This is where I plan to get this year and kind of what I expect. And then kind of, you know, I think for me, it was just a lot of tough love, a lot of, you know, not letting anything slide, especially in the beginning, being hard on them, but showing grace at the same time. And then obviously the players that came with me, I can't say it enough. They've been a crucial part to the success of this program. Just being able, because they already knew me, knew what I expected, knew how I am, how I am. And then went in before, you know, we had our first meeting, our first practice or anything like that. Told the players, had a player meeting, told the players, hey, you know, this is what coach is like, this is what he expects. You know, if you're not on board, like, you guys can leave now type deal. So it was kind of one of those things where, you know, off the help of the players and then just going in there with that mindset, like, this is what I'm striving for. This is where we all should strive for. And this is what I believe in. I mean, we have a lot of potential. You know, obviously there are some hiccups along the way, but I mean, when you see the full potential of what we could do, it's a beautiful thing.
Coaches, we're going old school this week with a new offering from Tyler Whitcomb Basketball Coaching Courses. The Jerry Tarkanian UNLV Runnin' Rebels Playbook by Farshad Alemi is now available. Visit coachtube.com/users/Tyler Whitcomb to check out this great old school resource.
When you started looking at your vision back when you first got the job, what's been the hardest thing for you to institute, instill in the program from what you originally thought the vision for Yellowstone Christian was going to be? What's been the most challenging aspect of your first season?
Oh, man. Most challenging aspect. Man. I don't know, honestly. It's just, I think overall, just coming into this program, new players, new system, in itself was challenging. You know, being able to, I honestly thought the hardest part was going to be getting the players to buy into me. That's what I honestly thought.
That's what you anticipated.
Yeah, that's definitely what I, especially the returners, because, you know, most coaches
right.
Go in and they clean house. I actually did not clean house. I kept all the returners, brought in some new players. So definitely was getting the players, especially the previous returners. And Coach Rogers, who was the women's coach, he was doing both before I took the job. So he had brought in some recruits signed some recruits before I got in. So then now getting those recruits to – you know, believe and buy into me, what I felt like was going to be like the biggest obstacle. But I mean, like I said, I brought those players in it. They kind of helped out. And I think one of the things that the players really expect is, I mean, I kind of tell them how it is. I'm essentially kind of like them, a player coach. I have great relationships with all of them. Going to play video games, to just sit down talking, to watching, you know, football and all that. So I just think also building that relationship also helped with that as well. But yeah, definitely having you know, the players buy in, which I thought was going to be the biggest obstacle coming in here.
Yeah, I think it sounds like, though, from what you've said, that you've been able to do a really good job with the thing that you thought was going to be the biggest challenge. And I think that's a credit to what you've been able to do. And I'm sure it speaks well to the future of where you're headed. So let's think a little bit about that for next year. As you start looking at, I know you're in the middle of your season right now, but as you start thinking about where you want to continue to make improvements, what are some areas that, as you continue on through the rest of your season this year and you look to the future of the program, what are some things that you think moving forward that can make a difference and help you to improve and become an even better program than you are right now?
I think one of the main things for me would be more preparation time. You know, just being able to prepare for schools is tough. And it's kind of tough for me, I think, is because I'll do a scouting report, get prepared for this, but we play like, say we have a game back-to-back, but then having to prepare for that second game for me is kind of tough because I start mixing the two scouting reports. And, you know, like, oh, this number three can shoot when really like the three we're playing on the team really can't shoot or, probably doesn't play. So just being more organized in the preparation in that aspect, I thought I had a lot of time and, you know, time flies really. Like I said, I didn't know much of the administrative side coming into it. And obviously didn't take that into account. It's like, oh man, I have all day doing scouting report. Oh,
right.
You know,
right.
I'm good. You come in like, oh, no, you don't. So definitely more preparation, being more prepared for those kind of games would definitely be, I think, a key for me moving forward.
Yeah, I could see that, especially, again, without an assistant coach. When you think about, even at the high school level, how much responsibility a head coach puts on their assistant, whether that's from a scouting report standpoint or they take over some aspect of the practice plan or maybe they're calling all the, you know, the ATO plays or they're in charge of the defense or whatever. And here's you as one guy doing and trying to keep all that straight. As you said, you're scouting multiple games that, you know, you're looking maybe one opponent ahead. Whereas if you had an assistant, somebody would be on this game, that game. And it's just, I can only imagine trying to keep everything together, how challenging that is. Well, you and I got connected, through Ian Cunningham and the Kenny Anderson Showcase. So talk a little bit real quickly before we get towards the end of our time. Talk a little bit about how you got connected to Ian and how you came out to the Kenny Anderson Showcase and just what that opportunity was like for you. And then I assume you're going to come back out to it again this year.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so I mean, Ian's my guy. We talk, you know, almost every other day, just touching bases. We just talked actually today. He's trying to give me another podcast as well. Talk to me about, you know, his Kenny Anderson Showcase coming up May 29th and the 30th, about how excited he is, how many players he has, you know, different schools that's coming out. But I actually connected with him through Twitter. It's kind of interesting because I actually didn't have a Twitter account until I came here to Yellowstone Christian, the women's coach. You know, I was going through recruiting, you know, trying to figure out different, you know, sites to recruit, trying to get an idea of, like, where he recruits or how he recruits. And he told me, like, hey, one of the main things is, you know, believe it or not, is social media, is Twitter. So I just seen on there he had posted some stuff about, you know, a showcase he had. I liked a couple of his tweets. And I just asked him, like, hey, you know, I'm looking for a big. I need a big. We're kind of short over here right now, so I really need a big. So, oh, yeah. You know, we had a couple at the showcase. Got me in touch with Sean Noble, actually from South Africa. Great guy. Got me in touch with him. It's like, hey, you know, he was one of the top 16 in the showcase. You know, give him a look or give him a shot, give him a try. At the time, there was no film on him. I wasn't able to see him live or was able to do anything like that. So I just kind of, you know, hey, just took his word for it, you know.
Let's give it a shot, right?
Yeah, I know one of the main thing coaches value is the word. And, you know, if a coach, if the word goes bad, if they bring a player, they send a player to one coach and the player ends up being, you know, like a cancer or whatever, then they're going to question the next player they try to get out.
For
so
sure.
It's like, hey, you know what? All right, let's give it a shot. Brought him in. And he's actually been doing really well for us. And he's, for me, it's a beautiful thing because he's only a freshman, 6'9" freshman. So I still have time to mold and groom him. By the time he gets to a senior year, hopefully he's, you know, he's beasting out there. So that's kind of how I got in touch with Ian, was actually through Twitter.
That's amazing. The internet is just an incredible place. The fact that people can connect. And I think from a basketball standpoint or from a coaching standpoint, that's one of the things that we found with the podcast as well, is it's just so interesting how people will reach out to us or we'll get in connection with someone or we'll say, okay, boy, this person is doing something great in the basketball world. let's reach out to them and see if they're interested in coming on. And conversely, we'll have people that reach out to us and say, hey, love what you guys are doing. Do you have any need for, you know, me to come on and share my story? And so we've had people come on that way. And then we've had people that we've reached out to. It's just, and it's all, again, it's all done through the magic of the internet and through the magic of basketball. And that's just something that is, it's just incredible to me. And
yeah, definitely.
I'm thankful every day that we live in the time that we do now. So we're all connected in such a way that it makes the basketball world much, much smaller. And I know you mentioned, you know, how we all borrow and steal and take things from other coaches and make it our own. And I think that is so true. There's nothing truer ever been said in the coaching profession probably than that. So you mentioned you have a new Twitter account. So before we wrap up, Jamil, I want to give you a chance to share your contact information for people who might want to reach out to you after listening to the podcast. They want to hear more about your story. They want to ask you a question. Maybe they're interested in learning more about Yellowstone Christian. So just give people an idea of how they can reach out to you and find out more about what you're doing with your program.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one way is definitely email. The school email will be jsantiel, S-A-N-T-I-E-L, at yellowstonechristian.edu. Then Twitter, Instagram, both of them are millymill22, M-I-L-L-Y-M-I-L-2-2. That was kind of a nickname that just kind of stuck on me, and I didn't feel like changing it. Kind of liked it.
Understood.
So left it as millymill22. Yeah, those are really the main ways that anyone can contact me if they have questions about, you know, the program, what we're doing over here, the degrees I offer. Obviously, they can look online at Yellowstone Christian, Google us, and stuff like that, and see what we're doing. We also have a men's Twitter page. I couldn't tell you the at name. I think it's Yellowstone Christian MBB.
We'll look it up. We'll make sure it gets in the show notes along with your own personal Twitter so that everybody can find that. So we'll get both of those in the show notes so people can find them when we put that up together. So that'll be great. And like I said earlier, we really appreciate you being willing to jump on and come on and share your story. I think it's a very interesting one just from the standpoint of here's a guy who didn't really think he was necessarily getting into coaching. And now at a very young age, you're in charge of your own program. Although I'm sure on certain days, it's very difficult for you to think about the fact that you don't have any assistant. I would bet that as we look over the course of your career, if we come back and talk to you again in 20 years, I'm pretty sure you're going to look back on this opportunity and all the things that you had to do / got to do in this job is going to help you in your career as you move forward without question.
A couple of coaches. I know I was talking to Coach Will just because he was the only, at the collegiate level, only coach I was able to coach under. But just the coaches that really influenced me and helped me out, especially like attaining this role as Coach White over at Indio High School. He's a head women's coach over there. He's been a big influence. And, you know, my career and helping me get to where I'm at, and, you know, a mentor, if you will, another father figure. And then obviously Coach Lamont over at, he's also at Indio High School coaching the boys varsity team over there. Coach Thad doing great things over at Xavier Prep. They're having a real good season. Coach Thomas, Coach Steve McGuyan, and then one of my coaches that passed away a couple of years ago, Coach Ned. I wouldn't be here without them, and I thank them every day for this opportunity. And obviously, I thank the Lord and Savior above for blessing me with this opportunity to come out here and do what I love. It's truly a blessing. That's all I have to do is coach. So it's truly a blessing to be here. And I do thank you and Coach Ian for the opportunity, connecting us and giving me the opportunity to come out here and talk.
No question about that. I think it's great that you were willing to send that thank you out to the guys who came before you and who have helped you in your career. Because I think that it's important for all of us to remember that we didn't get here alone. And there's always somebody that is helping us and pushing us along the way and opening up opportunities for us. There's no question that none of us get to where we are without the help of those great mentors and people who are along the journey that help push us along the way. And it's great that you have that attitude of gratitude, so to speak, to be thankful for those coaches that came on. So again, we really appreciate you jumping out with us, Jamil. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Registration is now open at headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps for boys and girls in grades 1 through 6 throughout the greater Cleveland area. Get registered today and make sure you hit the courts with us this summer.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.